Good. How are you doing, Brian?
Not too bad so far today.
Well, good, good. Well, we, of course, the FOP, which is an organization, you're the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. I mean, I think you would agree, you're probably more politically active this year than traditionally the FOP has been.
Well,
Go
I'd
ahead.
say lately, I'd
Yeah.
say lately over the last few weeks, we've been active for as long as I've been on the state board, which is about 20 years now. So
Yeah. So,
we're.
but yeah. So I guess help sort this out. We could talk about how politically active the FOP has become, because obviously you'll weigh in on issues that are relevant to the police, but now you're even endorsing candidates, which I think might be a little bit new, but I do want to talk about this particular issue. It's been in the legislature. I know that Representative Hawkins had a version. We know that Senator Anthon had a version of this, that basically the expectation is there that local sheriff's departments sign up for this federal program that partnerships with ICE and helps them with immigration issues. And you have pushed back against that very, very strongly, but yet we did see that you had posted on social media that you're at a conference in Las Vegas with Tom Homan, and the whole point of the conference is to talk about how important it is to have these partnerships between ICE and local law enforcement. So from our perspective, it's a bit confusing, and it seems to be that there might be double messaging going on here that can be confusing to people looking at it. So I'll give you the floor, and you can sort all of this out for us.
Sure. Well, the conference that I'm at is a group of FOP leaders from across the country, and it's many different things. One aspect was that we were just fortunate to be able to listen to Tom Homan speak to the group yesterday morning. So this whole conference is not just about that issue, but law enforcement by and large is I believe supportive of the message that Tom Homan's putting out there and supporting ICE and handling illegal immigration appropriately, shutting down the border and all of that. So what personally, I am with Tom Homan and support everything he says on that. Going back to if it's confusing that I support that and that we post that as a fraternal order of police, it shouldn't be. To clarify, law enforcement in Idaho and our organization, everybody is happy to work with ICE. I don't know of any agency that hasn't been cooperating, working together with those federal partners. For decades, the 287G program in particular has been around for a long, long time. And the reason that we've pushed back on that, we're standing with the Sheriff's Association, the chiefs, and we're beside them, kind of pushing back on the reasons why they're opposed to this. And most of that centers around pieces of that are redundant and unnecessary. Pieces of a couple of those bills talk about data collection. It's data collection on everybody that's arrested, and most often it's already being collected, and I don't think anybody's even asked for it. And then it was confusing on who wants it, where we're going to post it, what we're going to do. Other pieces of this, different agencies are made up of different resources and different capabilities. And so one thing we've been, standing beside the sheriffs and the chiefs about is this mandate to apply for and try to participate with resources that you don't have. And also, to speak to the sheriff's point of they're more than happy to participate. They're in line with working with ICE and those federal partners on this. But having to be joined and tethered and tied to these federal programs, especially when there's been language in it that ties you to unknown future programs, is problematic for them. And they feel like it's an overreach of federal authority, especially when we've spent the last few years and the legislature's passed bills that prevent us from, the federal government coming in and mandating that state and local law enforcement say go door to door and get guns and things like that. But now we're going to turn around and do this the opposite. And I realize those are kind of two different issues, but why are we forcing that control over something that should be a local control issue? And so that's what we're just in line with those groups supporting their effort in opposing it for those reasons.
Okay, so I want to clarify something because we actually had someone text in who doesn't understand this. This is not the federal government requiring you to do this. This would be the legislature that would require you to do it. So,
Sheriff Holtz put it the best way before. This is the state government forcing the local government to do the federal government's job. And when we have a lot to do in the state and local arena of public safety and law enforcement, and so we don't always have the time to do the federal government's job. We're not trained to that. We don't have access to all their training and systems. We don't have access to their resources. And if we're going to do that job for them, why aren't they coming here and doing that job? You know, we're happy to work with them, and we do. And a lot of my agency does. And so, why are we overstepping that reach and bounds into local control over all that? That is what's unknown to me, and I believe those are some of the main reasons the sheriffs are opposed to this.
Okay, I can actually understand those reasons, that and that's far more clarification than has been printed in any newspaper or whatever. Yeah. But I feel I've got to push back just a little bit, because if Sheriff Holtz is saying, well, they want us to do their job, well, that's a pretty broad stroke, Brian. They're not asking you to do their job. They're asking you to clarify a couple of data points. And I would love to hear how that is too much. Clarify, how much time is that going to take? And why can't you do it? Because they're actually not asking to do the whole entire job.
Before you answer, Brian, I just want to add a quick follow-up. It's stuff you say you're already doing, that you're you're complying with them. So I would also ask, if it's going to take up so much extra time, but you're already saying you're already doing it.
Yeah, and the reason is, for example, one of those bills pointed to collecting data on every single arrestee, and the language in that bill was confusing as arrestee or people detained or suspect in every law enforcement agency. And then at the tail end, in the depth of that bill, what it was really asking for is published data on how many illegal aliens have been arrested and turned over to ICE on detainers. That happens in the jail. And so the point is you've got police departments and state police collecting points of data on every arrested individual that is redundant, or by the time someone gets to jail and through that process could be different. And so you're trying to have agencies publish groups of data that are going to conflict with each other, which is going to cause people to challenge it. On top of that, there's the assumption, and I heard some testimony from people in the committees and people calling in, that, oh, it's just easy to get this software and poke this information and bam, you're going to know someone's citizenship instantly and be able to just record this data. It doesn't work that way. It works that way on TV. You know, we have access to some information, some systems, and some things you can tell where people come from. But what we've seen in the jail process, when someone goes to jail and you start collecting that data, it takes time to confirm who those people are. They don't always give us the accurate information. It takes time to go to other partners and run fingerprints and check pictures and all that stuff. We don't necessarily have direct access to those federal systems that may have that data. And I think there's an assumption that people just says we can instantly do that. And so when you apply that to police departments, state police out on the road, and you've got a state law that mandates they collect that information, it takes extra time to go through all that process and manpower to just collect that data that's already being done in the jail setting to get the data that people are looking for, but they're going to be mandated to get the data on everybody. And that takes officers off the street. That takes cops out of your community. It stretches that manpower that's still responding to 911 calls and crashes and emergencies. And that's why the chiefs are pushing back on that. Those are the pieces in that bill that were concerning. And the other concerning thing is, there's pathways to get what we're trying to accomplish. If what we're trying to accomplish is say, data collection on how many arrested individuals went to ICE on detainers and subsequently deported. Has anybody asked for that data? Like, if that's what you're after, why not talk with law enforcement? Why not talk with the sheriffs? Why not talk with the chiefs? Why not talk with the FOP? Why not talk with the prosecutors and find a pathway there that you can make this work? And instead, we're just throwing these bills out, not talking to stakeholders. And then when you've got us, the sheriffs, chiefs, going into committee and testifying and expressing these concerns, legislators are scolding us for being there. That's the same thing that all the rest of the public is doing in those committee hearings, and they're scolding us for being there and giving our two cents on that. And now we're pushing back, and now we're getting accused of being anti-immigration, anti-ICE, and all this stuff. I think someone's trying to push these things to be a gotcha moment for somebody, and they're misunderstanding that law enforcement isn't against all this. It's against the way we're doing this. You know, why not communicate and find a good path forward that works instead of drive this wall in between everybody? It doesn't make sense.
Well, that's been one of our concerns here, because it almost feels like there's this gigantic barrier between the sheriff's department is not speaking directly to the legislators. The legislators are not speaking directly to the sheriff's departments or the sheriffs. And then we're fighting this battle in a hearing meeting and then in the public eye. Has there been any kind of collective? A lot of meetings happen over the non-legislative session, the other 9 months of the year. Have there been any collective meetings between lawmakers and the sheriff's departments?
On this issue, not that I'm aware of. We had several immigration bills last year that we had concerning pieces on. We expressed our opinion on, and so did the sheriffs and the chiefs. But there's been very little, no interaction between the FOP and those groups working on it. And of course, like, your chiefs and your sheriffs are probably a little higher on the stakeholder poll, or, you know, of that. And I know that Senator Anthon, I think he said in community that he had been working with sheriffs on this, and then sheriffs in the Sheriff's Association have come out pretty strongly saying, no, you haven't. You know, they may have been in a room, but nobody's listened or communicated or worked with them on any pathway forward. I can tell you that on those issues right there, no one has worked with the FOP or come to the FOP to work on that. And we're always here. We're there to be a resource. You know, we're not just up there being active in the legislature just to be active. We're there as a resource of a perspective of this wide variety of our membership. We're over 2,800 members in the state, of city, county, state, law enforcement, people from the new officer to administrators and sheriffs. So we're just a point of view, and we're not competing with sheriffs or chiefs or anybody else, but we're one point of view. We're a resource they can draw on. Sheriffs are a resource they can draw on. Chiefs are a resource they can draw on. And before this last couple of sessions, it used to be legislators would come to us and say, what do you think of this? How can we solve this problem? What's the path forward? We're not seeing that at all this session, very, very little at all in '80s. I think Representative Hawkins, when he first introduced some of these bills, he was asked directly in committee if he'd worked with law enforcement on any of these, and he said no,
yep,
he hadn't. So, and here's the other problem, too, is you can't, a legislator, you know, can't go and say, well, I talked to a police officer here or one sheriff or one chief here, and then go in and say, I've got all of law enforcement behind this. And then you've got the bulk of law enforcement raving a bunch of red flags, and everybody's mad because they're there the last minute waving red flags. Well, we don't know what's going on until they introduce it. So
we're talking with Sergeant Brian Lovell. He is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Sergeant Lovell, I wanted to ask you about this. Is there a bill that could bolster the cooperation with ICE that you would get behind? Is there a version of this or an idea of this that with enough collaboration that you could get behind? And if so, what is that? What changes would you like to see?
You know, that's a great question. I think there probably is. I think most of the versions that we've seen this year are just unnecessary and create just redundancy that doesn't really accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. So I think at this point, you know, it's too late. I think they were pulling killed bills and amending them with something else or the same thing just up until late last night. And I don't know if there's time to do any of that this year, but a lot of it could have been avoided. Could have been avoided up to this point if someone would have just worked with the stakeholders involved in this. You can't go and say, I've got this idea for a bill and push it through because we want to solve this one problem, and then ignore 25 other problems that it creates from it. And if you're just ignoring that and not considering the cause and effect of some of that, then why are you really pushing this? What are you trying to get after? What are you really trying to accomplish? Is it to solve this one problem, or are you doing this for something else or someone else?
Okay, so as a follow-up to Neil's question, I'm going to ask you to, in your job as a sergeant, not as the FOP, but as a job in the job as a sergeant, if you were to go, okay, I'm going to give myself a report card, what could we do better as a sheriff's department with this immigration issue? What could we do better to help bridge that information gap that is happening between everyday people and the lawmakers, to go, we're doing as much as we can to aid in this immigration problem? Is there something more that you could do, and then that could be written into a bill?
Possibly. I mean, I think, you know, people in their communities need to build a relationship with their sheriffs, with their chiefs, with their local law enforcement. And we have that in Bonneville County. We have a very supportive community. And it's like with anything, everybody looks out for each other. And here's the problem, is I think everybody's under the assumption that you can just drive around and go, there's an illegal immigrant. You can't do that. We go respond to a variety of different types of crime, and we go handle the crime, handle the issue at hand. And then you might discover that there's an issue with someone's status after that. And so it's difficult to drive around, and you can't just go door to door and go, hey, we're gonna see if you're okay to be here or not, and then go from there. Is that a priority of your local law enforcement? Or should we be checking the speeders and the suspicious people in your neighborhoods and all that? If communities would just communicate and talk with their sheriffs, and some places do, some places don't. If they build that relationship to say, hey, I want to know what's going on here. How are you handling this? How does the law work? If they build an understanding of what law enforcement is doing in their community, the parameters that they have to work with, understanding those things, and then apply it to what maybe someone's trying to do in the legislature and all that, and have those conversations beforehand rather than just watching headlines, watching pieces of media information. If they're really paying attention and knowing who their legislators are, knowing what they're doing, and educate themselves about that. And I would say appeal to your legislators and tell them, hey, work with your stakeholders, work with the people that are going to be affected by what you're trying to support or run in the legislature. Make sure you're doing this the right way, rather than rush this through at the tail end of the session and push, get this, hurry and get this done, because there's consequences to this when you do that, and you can't just come back and fix it tomorrow.
We're talking with Sergeant Brian Lovell of the Fraternal Order of Police. I wanted to ask you, Sergeant, about appears to be increased political involvement. And I've always felt like the FOP, obviously they weigh in on any kind of legislation or issues that directly involve law enforcement. But I do see that you've gotten behind Barb Ehart's opponent this year. Is that something the FOP plans to do now, is to endorse candidates, or I guess sort that out for me?
Well, so I'll trade a couple hats here for you on that, and I'm glad you asked. So the Idaho FOP, as an organization statewide, we've done endorsements. Some of our local lodges in the around the state have done endorsements on their local level, and nationally, the national FOP does endorsements in that respect. And so we're an organization that's run from the bottom up. I'm the president of the state lodge at the state level, and I've got a great executive board of cops that are spread around the state, and our local lodges tell us which way to drive the ship, so to speak, and then we present our voice to the national level and tell them which way we think they should drive the ship. So endorsements, that's nothing new from the state level at the FOP. Now, I am part of Connor Cook's campaign, and that is a different hat that I'm wearing. I was asked to be the treasurer of that, and I'm supportive of that. So the Idaho FOP hasn't decided on any endorsements yet this year. That's a process we're working through right now. And so me being part of that campaign is separate from any endorsement decision that the Idaho FOP might make in that race. But that race is probably going to be included in what we're considering, of course, just as we do every election cycle. So I've got kind of two different those are two different hats. Just because my name is on that campaign is not necessarily mean it's the Idaho FOP's campaign. I'm supportive of that because I live in the community and I support, I know Connor very well, and I think he's going to do a great job. And I think it's time for a change in there in that respect.
Okay. Why is that? Barb has a very solid sterling record, so I know we're sort of shifting gears here, but why do you think a change is needed? Voters have seemed to be very happy with the job she's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Barb has done a great job. There's no question about that. I think there's probably some things that and here's my take on legislative efforts. I was asked this question yesterday about, supporting legislators or candidates that the back to blue or whatever. And here's my take on that is when I feel more comfortable supporting candidates that are willing to come to the table and work with stakeholders, even if you don't agree all the time, even if they're on a path that's opposite of the path that we'd like. And we get it. We're, as an organization and personally, I understand there's no way I can get my own way on every single issue. And if I've got a legislator that at least is open to communication and supportive of having the discussion at the table, and at least trying to find a path, to me, that makes me feel more comfortable that they're supportive of law enforcement and public safety versus a candidate or a legislator that just says one thing, goes and does another, or puts up that wall and doesn't want to communicate with stakeholders at all. So I don't doubt any of Representative Ehart's track record and her abilities. She's very smart and she's done a great job for constituents. I feel like Connor Cook is going to do a great job communicating with people in his district and communicating with stakeholders. I think he's got a different take on some of the directions with education and growth and all kinds of things different than what Representative Ehart has done and the things that she's been behind. There does seem to be times, and I can tell you an example right now, it does seem to be times where what she's doing or the direction she's headed ends up being different than the direction she ends up being in the legislature with her votes. And there might be reasons to that as well. Because things change between in Idaho Falls and when you get over there and in the thick of things moving so fast, especially what we've seen in the last several weeks. So I think Connor's got some great ideas and people should go and meet him and discuss with him and talk with him about what those ideas are. And I think it's healthy to have competition and people challenging that. And ultimately the voters will decide in the end.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Sergeant Brian Lovell joining us this morning as the president of the Idaho Fraternal Order of Police. Brian, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right.